If you want to get through, you want to do it right now. This is a busy, busy hour. Welcome back. Our third hour kicking off in Southern California. I'm in the Quicken Loans studios. I am Jim Rome, Quicken Loans. Mortgage confidently with Quicken Loans. Busy hour because we are scheduled to be joined by Astros manager A.J. Hinch right now. Tyler Kepner coming up at 40 past. So the next segment's wide open. And I'm getting some reaction to that last caller. We had Buddy in North Carolina. Buddy was saying, why does the Daytona 500 not get more attention? Why is there not more reaction? Why don't these guys get more respect? Why don't they get more credit? Take any other athlete. They're not getting behind the wheel of a $200,000 car. Phil in Dallas tweets, thanks for interrupting Buddy in North Carolina before his soccer take. Aaron in Diamondhead tweets, Buddy in North Carolina, don't know my driving history, signed Yasiel Puig, casually going 110. And Lewis just tweets, run this neck. Just run this neck. As promised, we're joined right now by the manager of the Houston Astros. He led them to their first World Series title last season. Fourth season with the Astros. He was a two-time Pac-10 Player of the Year at Stanford. He is a member of the Stanford Athletics Hall of Fame. The Astros open up at Texas March 29th. A.J. Hinch is my guest. A.J., it's always good to talk to you. How are things?
Life is good, Jim. I like that intro, especially when you said 2017 World Series champs. We've had quite an offseason, and now we started camp first full squad today, and we're off and running.
You know, I was going to ask you about that offseason because it's got to be an offseason different than any other because you are world champions. But what about camp? AJ, pitchers, catchers reported last week. You've got your first full squad workout scheduled for today. So what's the mood and the vibe like in West Palm Beach right now?
Well, it's pretty good. You know, we returned, like, you know, almost our roster in its entirety. We added a couple of relievers, Joe Smith, Hector Rondon, and then Justin Verlander comes back for his first full season with us, and Garrett Cole gets traded over here. So a couple new names, but the bulk of our team is already made. It remains the same, and it's interesting to have a team like that. Like, how do you prepare that team? How do you get that vibe going? And when I walk in the clubhouse, and it feels really good right now coming into camp. They're hungry. They're pretty humble. Now, I will tell you, the garage at Minute Maid has picked up some fancy cars in the postseason. We've been able to enjoy this parade for a couple months, but we're about to put that in the rearview mirror and start talking about 18 because there's a lot of teams that want to do what we did last year.
A.J. Hinch joining us. I know you're ready, but when you talk about the offseason, the fact that maybe there's some nice new cars in the garage. I mean, look, when you win the World Series, you're going to play a lot of extra games, which you did last season. Obviously, that's a good thing. But at the same time, is there any concern about that championship hangover? And if so, have you addressed it? And how do you go about preventing it?
Well, I don't think we know yet because a lot of us haven't gone through this. But I'm going in telling the guys that it's more of a mental thing than a physical thing. I think the physical grind is what it is. And we have an incredible athletic team, you know, led by the MVP and Jose Altuve and Carlos Correa and Bregman and Springer, Keuchel, Verlander. I mean, I've got really good players around the field that can physically get themselves ready. I think the key is mentally whether you can handle all this attention and all this love and all this, this notoriety that comes with this. I mean, you know, a year ago, we have a few fans sprinkled in full squad. Today, it was packed. And we, you know, that comes with a responsibility to stay hungry and do the little things a little bit better and all the things that spring training's for. We got to prepare ourselves to be ready because if you limp into spring training, you limp into the season, you find yourself at or below 500 a couple months in. And we've watched a couple teams struggle over the years. That's why nobody's repeated since 2000. And we want to be, you know, a really good team for a really long time, and we're not allowing ourselves that crutch of this hangover physically or mentally.
Astros manager A.J. Hinch joining us. You mentioned Justin Verlander. A.J., he said last week, and I quote, I think the American League goes through us, end quote. I'm curious, what do you think? You're chuckling now. What do you think when you hear that? I mean, is there a part of you that doesn't need that on a bulletin board, or do you like the feeling that, hey, we are the World Series champions. Of course the American League goes through us.
Yeah.
Well, I love it because I think our guys will do what it takes to back it up. I think it's all talk and it's good banter and trash talk, and you know you can put anything you want up on the board. You still have to go out and play, and our guys can really understand that. And obviously we won't be too brash and bold, but we do feel like we have the best team in the league, and we need to go out and prove it. And it's going to be a grind. And I can give you all the sound bites that you want about one game at a time or one series at a time, and that's all really true. We got to play every one of these games to get where we want to get. But to come in with a little swagger, come in with some confidence, more importantly, to go out on the field and put the work in to put ourselves in that position is going to be the key. So, you know, I've seen, you know, everything comes through Houston, and right now we are the world champs, but the games are going to start pretty soon, and some of that feeling or some of that, you know, outward trash talk is going to have to start to be on the field. But I love it for the tone to set that's the expectations around here.
You know, AJ, you talked about some of the guys who are going to be back. And when I look at guys like Alex Bregman or George Springer, to name a couple of guys, step up the way they did on the biggest stage, how much does that change them as players?
Well, I think it's going with maturity in the league, and I think that's where, you know, Jose Altuve's still in his 20s. He's obviously got a lot of hardware. Alex Bregman's brand new in his career, just having his first complete season. George Springer, World Series MVP, he just reached arbitration, so he's still young in his career. He's got a couple of years left before he hits free agency, and we hope all these guys can stay with us and stay longtime Astros, but as players, they're still developing, and there's something that every one of these guys can do to get a little bit better, to master their craft a little bit, you know, and whether it's an MVP or whether it's, you know, first guy in the league. So I think the being able to perform at the level we performed at the highest moments with the highest scrutiny and all the attention at Dodger Stadium, at Fenway, at Yankee Stadium, we were able to knock off three really big teams. And I think for the younger players or guys that are in the middle of their their careers, I think it's a confidence booster that there are no higher games that we're going to play. There are no more pressure packed situations than an elimination game against the Yankees or an elimination game against the Dodgers in Game 7. I mean, we can perform in that one. We can certainly perform in a random game anytime during the season and lead to the playoffs.
No doubt. Astros manager A.J. Hinch joins us for a few more moments. You mentioned Gerrit Cole. He comes over. He's one of the new faces in camp. He came over in that deal with the Pirates. What was your reaction when you first heard about that trade?
I was blown away because, you know, I was already starting to think about opening day starter, and Verlander and Keuchel both started opening day last year. He's sprinkling another dude that can do it and has done it the last couple seasons in Pittsburgh. You know, now you start talking about Lance McCullers and Charlie Morton and Peacock and McHugh, and I was looking down at this list of, we have a chance to roll out a really good starting pitcher every day. When you open up, you know, I guess nowadays it's your app, it's not the paper anymore, right? You open up your app on who's facing who, and right now Gerrit Cole makes our team ridiculously strong in the rotation because it's another frontline starter who's, you know, upper 90s, really good slider. We feel like we can make him a little bit better. And he's embraced coming over to this team and fits in perfectly. So when we got him, you know, I was pretty pumped because of the depth that it was providing. 200 innings in a supposed down year for him in Pittsburgh in the National League. I mean, that's unique given the way that starters come out of the games a little bit earlier nowadays. So it was music to my ears when Jeff called and said, "Hey, we got another pitcher, Gerrit Cole. He's coming. He's, you know, we traded for him and the depth, and we got better."
A.J. Hinch joining us. A.J., earlier today, Major League Baseball announced a few changes with regards to the pace of play, including a limit of 6 mound visits per 9 innings, shorter changeovers between innings. What's your reaction when you hear that, and generally, how do you feel about the pace of play right now?
Yeah, you know, I think it's tough to navigate, you know, in one memo or one new rule. I'll be interested to see how it all plays out and whether or not these are just little seconds that we're gathering or whether we're really making a difference with the changes. I mean, we'll play by the rules, and I've got to determine. I got to figure out exactly what does it mean to have a mound visit. They've given some definitions. We're going to meet with MLB next week. I don't think any of us know. You know, I know anything you bring into this game that's different, you know, creates a little bit of a stir, and there's a little bit of a buzz on usually a little bit of an aggressive reaction. So, we've got to let it play out before we really see if it's a difference maker or is it just different. But I think in general, I think guys like Chris play the games that happen. But I also know we played some pretty epic games that lasted a long time last season, both in the regular season and the postseason. So I guess beauty of the sport is in the eye of the beholder. Some people like no time limit, no issues with the pace of play. Let us just kind of navigate the game. And some guys like the speed up rules and trying to keep some of the dead time out of it. So we'll see. I'm not sold on what exactly the impact is going to be, but I know it's important to the commissioner, which means we have to play by the rules.
So, AJ, take one last look before you go at last season. You and your wife, Erin, were able to share that World Series run with your daughters. What did it mean to have them with you and sharing that experience with them?
It was so awesome. Thanks for asking about that. Because with the exception of they only went to school, I have two teenage daughters, so they went to school like 6 days the month of October, which for their teachers, they probably were a little bit frustrated. For me, I meant we kept winning. And so I liked having them around and being able to do it as manager. You know, I spend more time with this team and with these players and coaches than I do them during the season. So to take them to the big cities and having them enjoy the atmosphere. I mean, it was ridiculously fun atmosphere at Fenway and at Yankee Stadium and at Dodger Stadium, and to have them be by the stage and have them, see what winning is all about. It was I say it's a once in a lifetime opportunity, but I want it to be a second in a lifetime opportunity this year. So we'll bring them on board if we can get that far again.
Yeah, I was gonna say once in a lifetime, but you're right. Maybe it's not once in a lifetime. Certainly, you're not gonna settle for once in a lifetime. And as parents, AJ, haven't we learned that we start off like you cannot miss school, you cannot miss school. And now thinking is, once in a while, it's okay. You got to pull them out of school for a once in a lifetime opportunity, right?
No doubt. No, I think you have to live. You have to live life, and some of that comes with, bending the rules a little bit when unique opportunities come up. And I'm glad they were on board, and I'm glad they're all caught up with their schoolwork. And then we'll take them out of school for spring training too. So it's part of the baseball life.
It's part of the baseball life. He led the Astros to their first World Series championship last season. And back once again, AJ Hinch, great friend of the program too. AJ, thanks so much. I appreciate you. And it's always good to have you in the jungle. Thank you very much for doing that again.
Thanks for having me on. Yep, take care.
Have a great day, AJ. Thank you, AJ Hinch. God, they're loaded. Loaded. And remember, we didn't get into it too much, but Gerrit Cole won 19 games in 2015. Maybe didn't have the type of year that he wanted to have last year, but I'm looking at that guy, and I'm not sure what AJ Hinch thinks. I'm guessing that when you look at a guy like Cole, and he wins 19 games in 2015, and is still a 200 innings plus guy, if he's available, maybe you make some minor tweaks. But that rotation is so deep, and that team is so young, and they're so loaded, and clearly they're not built to win this thing once. So if you're in Houston, you got to be fired up. We're open right now. Tyler Kepner is coming up at 40 past, so the next segment's open. And what I want to do in the next segment, I want to hit this topic of LeBron James needing to, quote, shut up and dribble, and where I come out on that. And then you'll have an opportunity to tell me where you come out on that. 1-800-636-8686. It is toll free. You're in the jungle. I am Jim Rome. We're coming back. My thoughts on LeBron and whether or not he should just, quote, shut up and dribble, and your phone calls. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
You want to think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. All right, so I mentioned I've got an open segment right here. So if you're me, what do you do? Phone lines are lit. I got Mike in Clearwater. Larry, obviously. 12 Wood. Jason in Vancouver. Frank in Brooklyn. Somebody else that Hawk hasn't picked up yet. So, I mean, I've got, if it's a talk show host dream, 5-6 phone calls, everybody lined up, ready to roll. But as you know, more of me and less of you is probably better for the program. So here's what I want to talk about. If you're on hold, stay there. So Team LeBron wins, and LeBron was named the MVP. And one thing that was very clear by the time the All-Star weekend was over is that this is still LeBron's league. He may never win another NBA title, right? But it's still his league right now, even in his 15th season, it is still LeBron's league. As incredible as all the other stars in the association are, he stands out still above everybody else. And not just as a player, but as a leader and an ambassador. How many times did he talk about the fact that that game is watched in 200-plus countries around the world? That's not just a player talking. That's not just a great player talking. That's a businessman. That's a leader talking. Which is why it was all the more ridiculous, absurd, and really, honestly, in my opinion, downright dumb for somebody to tell LeBron to, quote, shut up and dribble. After he made comments that were critical of Donald Trump in a video with Kevin Durant. Not only was the take insulting on so many levels, as Durant said, quote, to me, it was racist, end quote. Here's the thing. LeBron is not going to, quote, shut up and dribble. Nor should he. We would lose out on so much if he did. But listen to why he won't. And what he said after the game when this came up.
I was down courtside. We had a timeout and all our guys walked to the bench. And I glanced over and I seen Dr. J, I seen Kareem, I seen Bill Russell, and I seen Jerry West. And I just thanked them. I thanked them. And the big O is not here, and I thank him too. But, you know, we all know what Kareem and Russell and all those guys went through in a time where whatever they said was like, no, you're not allowed to say that. Shut up and dribble.
Yeah.
And I can't sit here and allow that to happen because of what they went through. And, you know, it would have been the same as telling Jackie Robinson to shut up and to slide in the home base.
Yeah.
Or Jesse Owens to shut up and just go triple jump. I can't do that because there's so many people that's looking up to me and there's so many that's going to come after me. So, you know, I got to continue the path.
You know, so as he points out, there's quite the tradition of people in this country saying that athletes should do more. And simultaneously telling athletes to shut up and dribble. If a plumber has political opinions, nobody says to the plumber, shut up and fix the pipes. And while that should never be said to any athlete, because it's never said to anyone in any other profession outside of entertainment, it truly should never be said to LeBron. Because while he may not have a college degree, few people in this country have done more with less than LeBron. In many ways, LeBron is the embodiment of the American dream. Coming from a very difficult background to the top of his chosen field and having started multiple businesses in other fields. That's not dumb luck. That's smart work. That's hard work. But here's where the argument that LeBron James should just shut up and dribble really falls apart. Because if LeBron were to just shut up and dribble, there wouldn't be the LeBron James Family Foundation. And without the LeBron James Family Foundation, there wouldn't be the I Promise program that engages 1,200 at-risk students in Akron, Ohio. And if LeBron James would just, quote, shut up and dribble, there wouldn't be $41 million for full-ride scholarships at the University of Akron for students who go through his foundation's I Promise program. You see, countless futures are being changed because LeBron will not just shut up and dribble. You may not like his game. You may not like his politics. You may not like how he acts. But you have to respect this guy. You might feel more comfortable if LeBron would, quote, just shut up and dribble. But the league and the country would be a worse place if he did. 1-800-636-8686. Tyler Kepner is coming up in a few moments. Phone lines are open if you want to weigh in on any of this. If you're joining us late, we spent the entire first segment of the program, believe it or not, on the national anthem. That jumped today, clearly. We talked about the game itself, and the game was definitely better. There's no doubt the game was better. The format was better for the game. The fact that the winners got 100 grand was better for the game. And I think most of all, the fact that these guys knew they had become an embarrassment. Or the league. The All-Star game had become an embarrassment. and they knew it was a bad look for everybody involved. So they said, look, we got to do something about this. Now, let's not act like we got four quarters of hard basketball, but you got a great game in the end. There were some competitive plays at the end. There were some things at the end of that All-Star game that you would never, ever, ever see. I mean, LeBron and Kevin Durant swarming Steph on the sideline and DeMar DeRozan. And the fact that they couldn't even get a shot up at the end of the game, could not get a shot up at the end of the game. Normally, you're getting like five shots up every 30 seconds in an All-Star game. At the end of the game, they could not even get a shot up. I mean, think about that. An NBA All-Star game was won on a smart double team and harassing defense against the sideline. I mean, I have seen everything now. I've seen it all. And that was exciting. And if you can't admit that you are hooked, at least in the first few minutes or the final minutes of that game, then you're lying, because that was great. That was exciting. The end of that game was exciting. So the new format did help. The new NBA All-Star game was better. And I got to admit, I love the way that game ended. I can't say from start to finish that was an amazing game, but that was amazing in how that game ended. All right, when we come back, we'll talk some more baseball. New York Times national baseball writer Tyler Kepner joins us. I may have time on the back end for a comment if you have it, either via tweet, or if you want to call, or if you want to shoot me a quick email. Do not give up on it. You can still get through here. 1-800-636-8686. But right now, I've got a sports update for you here. Time for the ATP, the Ask the Pros, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. My gal Nikki is in. Nikki's good at this. Nikki writes, "Hi, Rome. A surprising part of my teaching career has been asking very unexpected questions like, did bacon just fall out of your pocket? And explaining that it's not considered snitching if you rat out the urinal pooper. What experiences in your career have been the most unexpected? Thanks, brother." Nikki. Brother. First of all, Nikki, in my 30 years of doing this, nothing as good or as surprising as what you just laid out ever happened to me. I never had to deal with a urinal pooper or somebody dropping bacon out of their pants. I don't know. I mean, like, you'd probably think that I've got, like, all these crazy stories, and I've got some pretty good stories. But in terms of, like, really unexpected things, you know, I don't know. It's Super Bowl a couple of years ago. I was cruising through the hotel lobby, and Seal goes, yo, Rome, what's up? I'm like, yo, Seal, what's up? A little unexpected. A couple of years before that, in the hotel gym, seeing the lead singer for Duran Duran getting his cardio in was pretty unexpected. And then when we talked junk about it the next day on the air, him looking like he wanted to fight us a couple of days later in the gym. Well, we weren't even talking junk, bro. That was respect. I've got a few more thoughts, which I'll get to. But I've got a guest. As promised, we're joined right now by a national baseball writer for the New York Times, Tyler Kepner. Tyler, good to have you back. What's up? How are you?
I'm great, Jim. How are you?
Good, good. Thanks for the visit. Listen, before we get to baseball, I want to talk to you about your connection to the NBA All-Star Weekend, specifically the dunk contest. More specifically, the fact that you gave up a moonshot to Donovan Mitchell's father in a media baseball game at Citi Field. What pitch did you throw him? Where did it end up?
Oh, man, it ended up, I don't remember if it was, I only have two. I have a curveball and a pretty slow fastball. So I don't remember which it was, but it ended up about eight or nine rows up into the right field Pepsi porch or Coca-Cola porch or whatever it is, way up there. It was the longest home run I've ever given up, and it was foul, but it was pretty cool, honestly, to see come off the bat. And he's a former AAA baseball player. So, I mean, Donovan Mitchell Jr. comes from pretty good athletic bloodlines. I did hold him to a single, though. So
good man.
After the foul ball.
Way to keep your head. Tyler Kepner joining us. All right, so last week, Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred announced that there would be rule changes with respect to the pace of play this season. Earlier today, the league announced that there would be a limit of 6 mound visits per 9-inning game, and they're looking to tighten up the breaks between innings. I talked to A.J. Hinch about this. What's your reaction to the changes?
Yeah, it was funny. I was over at Astros camp today, actually, so I talked to Verlander about it. He was not happy about it at all, Justin Verlander. I mean, you know, then again, his catcher, Brian McCann, didn't seem to think it was a big deal. He said, we just need to prepare more before games. We prepare a lot anyway, so it's no big deal. But Verlander was talking about getting crossed up with a catcher. And yes, there's a provision in that where the catcher can say, hey, I don't want the same. I'm on, you know, a different page here with my pitcher for the signs. I need to go out. So baseball, I think, tried to account for that. But pitchers don't like to be told what to do. Their whole job is to initiate the action and to be the one who starts. You know, nothing can start without them. And to be told that you can't consult with your catcher, that's going to ratchet up the, you know, the paranoia that they have in one sense, or just the fact that, you know, they want to be in control and they want to know precisely what they're doing at all times. And any limit on that is going to cause a major problem with a lot of pitchers.
Well, that makes sense. But if they're upset about that, what's going to happen if and when there's the arrival of a 20-second pitch clock? How likely is that there will be a pitch clock in Major League Baseball at some point in the near future? Because there has been talk.
Yeah, I think there will be, because, I mean, it's, you know, it's good in the sense now that, you know, they held off on it because that would have really upset a lot of players. But, Jim, I just don't see the way baseball is being played now that you're really going to shave off many minutes, if any, from the game. They can talk about pace of action, which Manfred likes to talk about, but it really comes down to the time of the games. And every time there's a short game, guarantee there are not a lot of walks and not a lot of pitching changes, and not a lot of pitches thrown. I mean, it's just basic math. The fewer pitches, the shorter the game is. And nowadays, guys get paid for taking pitches, showing plate discipline, wearing down the pitcher, and pitchers strike out a ton of guys. Every strikeout is at least 3 pitches, if not more. So more pitches means a longer game, and that's what baseball is geared for now, home runs and strikeouts with the velocity and power. So I don't think the time of game is going to go down no matter what they do with these changes today.
Tyler Kepner, New York Times baseball writer, national baseball writer for that newspaper. Tyler, really curious move, I thought, between the Padres or the decision by the Padres to sign Eric Hosmer to that 8-year deal. What do you make of that fit for both him and the team?
Well, with a guy like Hosmer, he's young enough to where you can kind of justify it. He turned 28 in October, so theoretically he should have a few more years left of his prime. I worry for the Padres' sake that the best years of this deal will be the ones before they become real contenders, because they don't have the pitching to contend this year. I mean, let's be honest. But they were a little better last year than most people thought they'd be, and there is something going on down there. They've gathered some good pieces in these trades. A.J. Preller knows what he's doing. And Hosmer is a leader kind of guy. There's definitely something to that. We saw him in the big stage in Kansas City. And he's a really good player. He's a good defensive player. I don't know how much of a big impact, difference-making offensive player he is, but he did it 25 home runs last year in a big ballpark. So I think it's a good signing for Hosmer, and I think it's okay for the Padres. I think the Padres need to take a step up at some point. They can't always be rebuilding. They tried a few years ago with all those big trades, didn't work out. And I like it when a team tries to, you know, shed, it's been an also-ran for a long time in San Diego. You know, it's time to do something. And Hosmer's a good guy. He's a reliable kind of person in that clubhouse. And he is pretty reliable on the field. But for that money, I maybe would have, you know, expected, you know, maybe more of a home run RBI type. But with the age and the leadership and the reliability, it's a solid play, I think.
Tyler Kepner, my guest. Now, you had a piece last week by Derek Jeter and what he's doing with the Marlins. Now, when this guy retired, he was a beloved icon. He could have stayed that beloved icon. He could have spent time on the golf course, and that legend probably would have grown larger and larger. Instead, he joins the Marlins, and now we see what's happening. And, the beating, frankly, that his reputation is taking. Why do you think that he made that move?
Yeah, that was the central question I wanted to ask, you know, when I got down there to, you know, sit with him one-on-one, because I covered him for so long in New York. And he really has a more perfect legacy, if you can say that, than probably any other player, just totally spotless. And he had what seems to be a really great comfortable life that he had earned for himself. But to take on the Marlins of all teams, you know,
right.
With all those complications with that fan base and the stadium and the history there and the payroll and just what a mess it was when Jeffrey Loria sold it, you know, that's the big challenge for someone who'd never been in that position before. But he wanted it. He said he wanted to, you know, always wanted to give back to the game in a way. But he always did want to be an owner. And he said, look, you can't pick when and where these teams pop up. This was the team that was open. And, you know, he does live in Florida. Now, he can't commute from Tampa. He realized that pretty quickly. He has to live in Miami because he's not a ceremonial guy. You know, he's going to do it. He's going to do the job. He's going to do it right and put in the hours. But it's a huge fixer-upper. And my takeaway from meeting with him, though, is that he's okay with the challenge of it, and he's still the same Jeter in the sense that, like, he doesn't really care about making a small incremental improvement. He said, what's improvement? I said, well, last year you won 77 games. What about 78? And he was, you know, he was scowling basically, like, 78 wins. He's like, come on, you don't buy a team to win 78 games. He's like, it's the same as it always was with me, which is if you don't win a championship, you know, it's a failure. So he wants to win a championship, and he didn't want to win 78 games. He didn't want 82 games. He wants to win the whole thing. And to do that, he feels like he just had to rip off all the Band-Aids at once.
So in terms of the plan, I mean, this is a team that's ripped down their roster every time they've won a World Series. So based on your conversations with him, what is his plan right now?
Well, his plan was that, look, this was not a World Series team, and this was not a popular team. This was, you know, the fans who were there can say they liked those players, and I'm sure they did, but it's been last in the league in attendance for 5 years. They had one uptick when they opened the new park. They got all the way to 12th, and then they quickly slipped back to last. It's been a very fickle baseball market that's been burned, you're right, twice. Both championship teams were quickly dismantled, but his point was that this team has never won, hasn't had a winning season with this Stanton, Yelich core group. And he said, look, the pitching was not fixable. He's like, there's not any two pitchers you can tell me I can go out and get that's going to make this team a winner. And he said, determining that this team had no chance, then he might as well trade pretty much everyone. I mean, he didn't trade Real Muto or Boer, but he traded the four big guys, Gordon and the three outfielders, because there was not a chance to win, and he was not in the business to come in and, like I said, win 78 games or win 70 games. He might as well win 60 or 58. And he's not conceding that either. He's saying, you know, don't assume we're going to lose. But in baseball right now, I mean, it's a problem, right? You know, all these teams tanking. But it is kind of the way the Astros did it, the way the Cubs did it. So he figures he's just got to, you know, rip it all down and tear it up and build it up in the way he envisions.
All right, so speaking of the Astros, before you go, you spent some time with them. As I mentioned, I had A.J. Hinch on earlier this hour. It's pretty clear Houston is not content with only winning that one World Series. Baseball has not had a repeat champion since the Yankees. How likely is it that the Astros do it?
Well, I was thinking that. I was trying to think of reasons that they shouldn't be picked, you know, to win it again. And I can't think of many. I think they did a really smart job last year in managing these guys' workloads. So they don't return a lot of pitchers who were worn out from last year, which seems to be a theme sometimes is why teams don't repeat. Their pitchers just don't quite have it as much. They have so many young guys in their primes. They really didn't lose anybody from the team. I mean, they lost Beltran and a couple of complimentary pieces, but nobody of major significance is off that roster. I think the safe play is always to pick someone else from the field, but I think if anybody has the best chance, it is probably the Astros, because those pitchers, again, were not terribly worn out last year. They're very, very deep offensively and in pitching, and that's what you need more than ever now. You need depth. It's harder than ever, you know, with no PEDs in the game, I guess, you know, to get through that long schedule. You need depth. The Dodgers had a ton of depth. The Astros had a ton of depth, and they're so far in a way better than any team in that division that they should be able to once again use a big division lead to give themselves the rest they need for October.
Well, Justin Verlander said it in the American League. It's going to come right through us, and I don't know how you argue that point, at least right now. He is a national baseball writer for the New York Times, Tyler Kepner. The Astros are having their first official workout of the year today, so it's go time for baseball. Tyler, great to have you back. Thank you very much. Always good to talk to you.
Absolutely. Always happy to join you, Jim.
You too. Tyler Kepner joining us. All right, got a couple of minutes left before we wrap this thing up. We may have time for a phone call. Dear Jim, seeing defense in an all-star game was shocking. Yours? Seeing an 80-year-old Coris Marshall point his quiet please sign at Hawks shirt. Patasar from Bugahaw warned me butting up to Hawk, so he lets me in the podcast side door when you least expect it. Listen, Brett, Hawk's done a lot of regrettable things, but he's still here. He's kind of got that survival mechanism. He knows that if he lets you anywhere near that actual podcast, that that probably will be the straw that breaks the camel's back. He'll be out of job. He knows that. He's not letting you in, Brett. He's not letting you in. Brett, you know how lucky you are even to make this show? And the reason you make this show is it's 3 hours every day, 15 hours a week. There's lots of real estate here. That podcast runs, I don't know, 30 minutes a week, 45 minutes a week. In the case of this week's guest, who I've already taped, it's more than an hour. He's that good. Brett, listen to what I'm telling you. You will never, ever, ever be a part of that podcast. I've got 25 episodes now. You have not been a part of the first 25. I could have 25,000 episodes. I could do 8 podcasts a day for the next 30 years, every single day. You do the math. You will never be a part of any of them. And you know why that is? It's not personal. I don't dislike you, Brett. Brett, really, I don't even know you. It's not personal. It's just your takes. They're not good. They're certainly not good enough to be on my podcast. My podcast, you hear me talk about it all the time, premium content, original content, premium content. It's a once a week show. What would it say about me and my brand if you were good enough to be on that show? It would say that it's not a very good show. In other words, Brett, you're wasting your time, brother. You could befriend Hawk. You could befriend Alvy, Keith, Austin, my wife, and don't get any ideas. Randall. Yeah. No. Yeah. My boss, Rich Ackerman. None of it matters, Brett. You will never be on the podcast. So, although David Goggins would choke me out for saying it, double down on your strengths, punt your weaknesses, because you're barely good enough to make it to the 3-hour show, Brett. You're wasting your time. Give up on the podcast dream. It's never going to happen. That's it. I like to end every show on a positive note. I like to be upbeat. Then we go into the next day feeling good about ourselves. Optimistic, positive, confident. Nice radio. My thanks to everybody involved. My guest, the XR4TI. Even you, Brett. Thanks for coming in here, Brett. Have yourself a day, Brett. And I'll see you all back here tomorrow. We're out.